fellas, ladies and gentlemen, children, politicians, everybody, we have a great show for you tonight. You are on with the Real Sports Guys, RSG Crew, Renegade Radio. Like we always do at this time, you are now in tune to the resistance. We'd like you to sit back, relax, and buckle up as we take you on a tour through that intersection where life, culture, sports, music, entertainment all meet up. And we're the corner boys that show you around, make sure you don't get lost, make sure you don't take no wrong turns. Now, we have a show that is just jam-packed. It's what we like to call a two-hitter quitter in honor of Floyd Mayweather. We may only get to two topics tonight because we got two just heavy, I'm talking elephant in the room heavy topics to get into tonight. But before we do that, I'm going to give you guys the information that you can get on and participate in this conversation. 1-347-989-0844. That's 1-347-989-0844. Call in. Get on with the Real Sports Guys. This is our new motto for 2011 into 2012.
We need more dogs.
That's what it's all about now. Call in. We need more dogs. All right? We don't need no cats. You know, take your extra bands and your new shoes. We don't need none of that. You know, it's 2011. And
we need more dogs.
We need more dogs. All right? So, I got my man D. Wills. Holla at the people.
You better watch that messing with that money team, as Ray J would say. Don't mess with that money team. That's what we're talking about. I'm good tonight. I'm so good tonight. I got stuff going on in the background. This is going to be on fire tonight, so y'all better get ready.
Oh, yeah. We're going to bring it. We are going to bring it. I also got my man rounding out the three-man booth. Just came out of the locker room. Got a shooting shirt on. Got a good lather going. My man, D. Newell, a.k.a. Phil T., the sports PhD, is in the house. Make some noise, partner.
Yeah, forgive me if I'm out of breath a little bit, man. Just finished up a three-man weave. Got the heart rate up, ready to roll with you.
Let's get into it. Let's go. We're going to kick it off like we always do at this time with the funky editorial.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Yeah. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
right.
Coleman, Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. I'm going to give out the number one more time. If you want to call in and get in, get into this conversation with us, please feel free to 1-347-989-0844 because we need more dogs. All right? I tell you, I'm killing that one, man. That's the new slogan. All right? That's the new mantra. We riding that one out. All right? So, the world of sports is in a great spot right now. As far as you, if you got a sports radio show, if you love sports radio, if you just love to talk sports, you got so much to talk about right now. It's a beautiful time. It's a chaotic time. There's chaos. There's bedlam. There's uncertainty. You know, there's controversy, and it all adds to this great gumbo we call sports. The first thing, we got two topics that we're going to get into in the funky editorial, and this may be the only two things we talk about tonight because they that heavy, they that deep. The first thing we're going to get into is the college realignment, this free-for-all, this mad money grab, you know, smash-and-grab mentality that is everywhere in college football right now. And I'm going to say my piece. I'm just going to go ahead and get this off my chest because I've been carrying this weight for a minute. This is something that, you know, if you're a friend of mine, if me and you have ever talked sports, you've probably heard me say this at some point, is that it annoys me to no end. People annoy me to no end when they say that they prefer college sports because it's about the name on the front of the jersey and not the name on the back. They say they appreciate, they rather watch college athletes and college athletics rather than professional athletics, even though the pros are actually more skilled and more and better at what they do. They rather watch an inferior brand of basketball, football, whatever the sport may be, because, and this is what I always boil it down to, and this is what I think it stems from, is because we as a people, we as a nation, as a society, are uncomfortable with young African Americans being rich and wealthy. And that's why people prefer college athletics over pro athletics. That's my hypothesis. And I will say this is why I view it that way, and this is why I'm in love with this whole mad dash for cash in college athletics, is because now you see your emperor is butt-ass naked. He ain't got on no clothes. That ain't Louis Vuitton. That ain't Gucci. That is skin, all right? He's got on nothing. He's got a flesh-toned suit on, all right? Your emperor has no clothes. This is about, this whole realignment thing is all about money. To hell with tradition. To hell with who we usually play. To hell with regional rivalries. To hell with all the stuff that you have come to know and associate with college athletics. All of the pageantry, all of the things that you think it's all about, all of that romanticized shenanigans and antics that go on with college athletics, all of that don't mean nothing. All of that is distraction. All of that is flair. All of that is uniform flair. That's what all of that is, distracting you from the true fact that it's about money. Get money. What did, in the words of the illustrious Randy Moss?
Straight cash, homie.
That's what it's all about. Straight cash, homie. All right. Now, what that college fan, that Joe College sports fan now has to realize is that you got to look at yourself in the mirror, Joe College sports fan. You got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? Really, the only reason I was into college athletics and college sports is because I am more comfortable with the idea of an old rich white man than I am with the idea of a rich young African American. That is what this boils down to me. And that's what I love. You hear Kirk Herbstreit and all these people scrambling and like, no, this is a bad thing. This isn't going to be a good thing. I love it because those are the people that have promoted this whole atmosphere of this whole facade of college athletics is about all of this other stuff, the allure of amateurism and all this other BS. And now it's right there out in front. You can't deny it. You can't not look at it. You can't run from it. This ain't about nothing but getting money. And I love it. The end. I had to get that off my chest.
I liked it, though. You was on one.
Hey, I'm going to let y'all weigh in now. I said my piece. I'm going to go back and I'm going to distribute the rock.
Church. I don't know where to go with that one because you just hit it. It's funny because every time someone makes a statement, the action goes the opposite way. And that's where you hit it right at the end of it. Even the, leaders in the NCAA have made statements about what they're going to do, but yet it's still every decision is about the money. And I think your whole idea about what people are comfortable with, what words really mean, is on point. And, people wonder why athletes do what they do because they see this every day. And, these decisions, because there's no governing body. Think about this. What organized sport do people have to get the opportunity to make as many free decisions about where they go as college football? I mean, I know we're going to talk about boxing and everybody talks about regulation of boxing, but we need regulation. What allows you a whole, like, how is it can an entire group of schools in a conference decide the Big 12 is not going to exist anymore? Like, how can that decision be made independently? And no one is even asking or questioning or calling for a need to have somebody who has oversight of that. And a lot is because conference commissioners have a lot of that power. They're not giving it up. There's the resources and the money. That's why the bowl game. I mean, everything that seems to be, like, if you use logic in terms of reasoning, in terms of creating playoffs, everything else, but they continue to do the things that don't make sense, that tells you it's about the money. They continue to try to defend the bowl system. And then you come up with a system that still can honor the bowl system and still give you a championship, and they say, no, we're not going to do it. Everything is about that idea of maximizing our money, and it's just not about dollars and revenue. It's about football becomes a very important way for development and foundations. If you look at the NIU game, NIU lost, what was it, 47-7?
Uh-huh.
But they announced that, I went to Northern Illinois for my master's degree. I'm an alum. I worked at Wisconsin, so I can talk a little bit about. And I can say that they lost 40-7, yet there was a $3 million gift they just got for new indoor facility. Now, who loses by damn near 30-some points and they get a $3 million gift?
And then not on top of the fact that they get to showcase their program on a professional field in an area that they're trying to, make sure that they lock down as recruiting territory. The benefits are unbelievable.
Are unbelievable. And so it's all that other stuff that, like I said, if people just go to a bowl game and look at the activities that's scheduled. Like, go to any alumni page of any team that goes to a bowl and look at their schedule of events around a bowl event. And that's going to tell you what the purpose, why we at presidents and stuff are holding on to the structure. So, I mean, you're right, and it's funny when you hear folks like Herb Street and all these other folks continue to defend it. And, when you have stuff like this where you can just dissolve a major conference, like Big 12 is a major conference. That's like GM. That's like GE of college football going under, right? That's like when we had the destruction of the banks, right? That you're saying if you rank conferences, the Big 12 is going to be in your top, just on a football standpoint and basketball. Think about it. It's probably going to be two or three, right?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
number two conference overnight does not exist anymore. Think about what structure. Think about any sport where that can happen. That's the part that just kills me, and nobody's even questioned, how can you even do that? It's not like the Mountain West dissolved. You're talking about one of your top major DCS conferences. People just decided, I'm going to take my ball and go home. How can that happen without some third-party organization saying, whoa, 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 is that in the best interest of college football? I think that is what people have to start getting into.
Yeah. Let it be broke. Let it be broke. We have a caller on the line. I want to bring the caller in real quick, and then we'll continue the conversation and pass it off to D. Newell. Caller, you're on the line. Who we got on the line with us?
How you doing, fellas? This is Brother Henry Grant from Beloit College, class of 2002.
My go-to.
What's
my
going
go-to
on, fellas?
Guy.
Is that Marcus Flowers?
Yes, sir. What's up, man?
What's up, fellas? I just got a text from Brother Devon telling me to hit the line. I've been meaning to do this for a while, but he just hit me the number. I said, let me call and see what these fellas talking about. How's everybody?
We good, man. Right now we're talking about college football.
Okay.
But I know you had a whole thing going on your page, on your Facebook page, about the Mayweather-Ortiz fight. Now, we can shift gears if you want to get into that. We can get into that.
Oh, actually, I was listening for a little while about college football. I'm going to be on the line for a minute, so we can definitely get to that in a second.
All right, well, let's get to the let's stay with this college football thing for a minute. I'm going to let Phil T. weigh in and give us his perspective on everything. Then I want you to jump in and hit us with yours. Is that cool?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get that. I'm going to throw it to my man, D. Newell.
Yeah, this, I mean, this college realignment's a trip, man. I mean, first of all, it's screwing up all my video games. You know, my, I got Nebraska.
You ain't lying, though, man.
I got Nebraska in, like, three different conferences on three different games. I got Virginia Tech on four conferences. I'm just all over the place, man. But, you know,
the ACC?
I mean, just listening to all this, two words came to my mind. Counterfeit amateurs, about halfway through this book. And, I mean, it just talks about how college football and big college sports, it's not truly amateurism. I mean, it's nowhere near. I mean, even in terms of the commitment that the student athletes get, back in the day, they got four-year commitments. Now it's a year-to-year basis. You know, it's just mind-boggling to me. And then people holding on to the hope that things are going to stay the way that they are. Guess what? This is America. Things change. You know, get on the bus or get out the way, one of the two. You know, so, I mean, these rivalries, they'll start over. I mean, all it takes is one or two big wins or somebody getting beat up in the stands. I mean, rivalries have a way to start on their own. So that's my take on it. Like you said, y'all broke it down pretty well.
Excellent. Henry, help us out. What's your take on this whole realignment with the college football?
I'm going to kind of take a step back because I do enjoy college football, but I haven't been following it like I should. It basically seemed like it's, you know, about money. You know, these schools are probably not making the money that they should. They're not, you know, you see Texas, they're not the team that they were the past few years. Like D. Newell said, what's up, D. Newell? A lot of these players are leaving early, going to, you know, it's not a four-year commitment no more. A lot of these players want to stay 1 or 2 years and go to the pros. They're not getting paid for, you know, what they're doing for the school. The school's getting billions of dollars. So they're looking at it for themselves now. This is just like another stepping stone to get to the professional field. So that's basically what it is. And, you know, like you said about the rivalries, which is true, you know, it'd be in Nebraska against a whole nother team in another conference. It'd just have to, you know, start over.
And this is the piece that, if you guys haven't been paying attention to this, Jim Boeheim came out and talked about how this is a football-driven decision and how, you know, this is about football programs and trying to get football money, but it has an effect on all of the athletic programs at a school. Mm-hmm. So now with the Big East, when you got Syracuse, UConn, Rutgers, and Pitt talking about leaving the Big East for football reasons, that just changes the whole landscape in college basketball, though, because now the ACC is a hell of a conference. That is when you got Duke, North Carolina, plus you throw in Pitt, UConn, and Syracuse, all of which are top 10 programs. You just created a monster basketball conference. But at the same time, then you leave behind the Georgetowns, the Louisvilles, you know, St. John's and Cincinnati, all of those schools that don't have football programs, that aren't football schools, they get left behind. Then the travesty of this whole situation, in my opinion, is Phil T, you brought this up. Kansas gets left out in the cold. One of the top three basketball programs in history is left out in the cold because their football program is doo-doo. So it has ramifications in college basketball, but then when you're talking about this, everybody's moving. Everybody's shuffling. Everybody's trying to find a spot, trying to get in where they fit in before, you know, ain't no spots left. And what's going to wind up happening is in this mass scramble, some schools are going to make some bads. Everybody's not going to come out of this okay.
Breaking news. Missouri might join the SEC. Breaking news.
They're talking about Notre Dame looking at the ACC.
Yeah, Notre Dame's scared of the Big Ten. Notre Dame's some punks. They're scared of the Big Ten. They don't want no part of the Big Ten. They some chumps.
Yeah,
y'all know I don't like Notre Dame.
No parts of it.
But it's it's again, is that that's not a good move for Missouri on any level. You want to run into the SEC? That's like,
I mean, right that, now man, Missouri is probably in that. I mean, they're like in that phase when you had your fantasy football draft and your timer's going. You're in the third or fourth round. The guy you wanted just got picked in the selection before. So you're scrambling. You're trying to figure out, okay, the Big 12 is about to be done. I need to find me somebody else to dance with. So at this point, I mean, conferences like the Big 10, other conferences, they can be very, very more selective in terms of what they offer. I mean, the teams going into these conferences, they have much, much less leverage than they had, say, a year ago, a year and a half ago, when we were talking about conference realignment. The deal, I mean, let's say hypothetically that Missouri goes to the Big Ten or the SEC. The deal that Nebraska got to go to the Big Ten is going to be much, much more sweeter than the deal that Kansas gets to go somewhere or Missouri gets to go somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other piece about this, again, like when you're a BCS school and you're going from a BCS conference to another BCS conference, in the end, to me, what is to be gained overall? Because what I think is going to happen is, and this, I still haven't seen numbers, or we'll have to, this is a wait and see, but I think this is going to hurt some athletic departments monetarily. Because now you're looking at different types of travel expense to play teams that may be out of your region, where you have a Texas needing to travel all the way up to an Oregon if they join the Pac-10, or Oklahoma needing to, you know, travel several 500 to 600 miles for a road game. That's gonna cut into your fans' ability to travel with your team, where you have your fans on the road. You don't have an alumni base in Oregon, so you're not gonna have walk-up sales to games, walk-up tickets to games from your alumni. So I think it's going to have an interesting effect that people aren't really in tune with yet, because they're looking at the upfront money. You know, it's like the cat that signs that big deal, gets that big signing bonus, and then in a couple of years it's regretting. Now they want to restructure their deal because what they signed up for, they got that money up front, but the rest of their contract really isn't all of that.
Scottie Pippen.
And so when you got your volleyball team, and you got your women's volleyball team at Texas, and they're traveling up to Eugene to play the Ducks, that's expensive for a volleyball team because they ain't bringing in that kind of money. You're not going to get that back. And these athletic departments already lose money on programs like that, but it's covered through the football expenses. So unless there's somehow going to be some new stream of revenue that's going to come with football, you're probably going to be getting about the same money after you get this initial influx from joining this conference. And like you said, Phil T, it's not going to be necessarily what it would have been 6 to 8 months ago.
And part of the problem I don't understand is Texas' whole deal with the Big 12 was that it wasn't built on revenue sharing. But then to go to the Pac-12, or now the Pac-15, you have to do revenue sharing. So if you were willing to do revenue sharing, why wouldn't you just broker a different deal within the Big 12, because as long as you have Oklahoma and Texas, you're good enough anchor to attract other teams. And your programs are good enough. If you're 11-1 every year and you schedule a couple of good out-of-conference games, you're going to be in a national championship hunt. So I don't understand the Oklahoma and Texas decision, because, it's like you said, and maybe they cut a deal where they're going to continue to make the – but you're going to have to do revenue share, because that's what all the other conferences do other than the Big 12, is they have revenue sharing. It's equal, and that was the problem with the Big 12. So why wouldn't Texas just stay? Because you can attract – I mean, they're an anchor program along with Oklahoma. They can attract programs to play with them. So I still don't understand this. So you're right. I think it's like – and these decisions are being made by presidents, ADs who are panicking, and they're not taking – and that's why, because there's no governing body that says there has to be some kind of grace period. I mean, that's why the NCAA and Phil, I'm glad you're reading that book. I mean, they're just basically out there. They don't have any kind of power over this.
other than what they do when programs violate. You know, that's the only thing that they have to keep you in compliance with the rules. But to really come down to it, if you really wanted to, these football powers could just walk away from the NCAA if they wanted to, except their own governing body.
So here's something I want to throw out to the dogs while we got everybody in the mix real quick, and while we got Hino on the line. My lovely wife, Marissa, brilliant mind, beautiful,
that's
right. Beauty to match. Her and I was talking about this, right? And that's why I love it, because we can talk about stuff like college football realignment. You know what I'm saying? So we're talking about college football realignment. And she throws out the idea that maybe some of the, like, again, for example, the women's volleyball team or the Maryland lacrosse or, you know, some of these other sports that exist at universities outside of basketball and football, some of these non-revenue-generating sports, maybe they just don't have a conference. Maybe they go to a structure where the schools have conferences for football and basketball, and everybody else plays who they want to play. And there isn't a conference structure. Because why does the volleyball team need a conference? Why does Texas volleyball need to be in a conference? Anybody? That's the same response I had. I was like, you know what? I think you got a point.
I mean, it is a strong point. I mean, I can only think of one devil's advocate type of statement, but I think it can be worked around, is the structure in terms of how postseason play is developed.
Right, and I think, and I agree. That was my counter. Was that, well, not necessarily a counter, but that was the thought that came to my mind. I had that same thought. Was that, okay, maybe they need it because of postseason, but then I thought about it, and maybe they don't, because, I mean, you can still have a ranking system, and you can still select teams to get to the postseason. There's only one conference champion anyway, and usually that team is pretty much a lock to go in anyway, so.
Right. I mean, you don't really counter your wife. You have an additional thought. I'm with you.
Exactly. Merry man, you feel me? And in the end, she's right. And it's your fault. But it was an interesting thought, and it's a different way of looking at this. I mean, maybe, you know, Texas women's volleyball just plays Texas Tech and Baylor and TCU, and they play Texas A&M, and they just play their traditional teams that they play. And the football team does all that traveling and stuff. But then we talked about Title IX. So that's a whole other bag of worms, and I don't know how that's going to play into this. And who knows, man. But there's going to be a whole lot of interesting things that come out of this that we're not looking at right now, because everybody right now is like Spacely Sprockets. They're like Cosmo Spacely, and all they got is dollar signs in their eyes. You know what I'm saying? They're just trying to get that money right now. And then I don't know if everybody's thinking down the line. I don't know if Rutgers is really thinking, if we go to the ACC, we become a dead program in all sports. I don't know if Rutgers realize that. Like, somebody might want to knock on the president's door and be like, you know, we still Rutgers, right? And so then the other piece is, what happens to these, like, because right now the Big East is still a BCS conference. So if I'm... You know what I'm saying? If I'm one of these kind of mid-level teams, if I'm Georgetown, I try to scrape up a few bucks to get a football program going. You know what I'm saying? Because that way we can see if we can get into the Big East. If I'm one of these middling programs, I try to sneak into the back door and get one of these automatic qualifying. Get into
Right. So UConn did a couple of years ago. I mean, UConn was just like Villanova, Georgetown now, you know? I mean, my nephew, his first game last week at Yale was against Georgetown, FCS. You know, I mean, that's just what UConn was 4 or 5 years ago, and look at them. They were in a BCS game, you know, 4 or 5 years into being Division I.
Right. And so, you know, because the Big 12 right now, even though it's like two teams, you know, we call it the Big Deuce or whatever you want to call it, they got two teams, and those two teams, you know, one of them is going to get a BCS bid. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff going on with this. And I don't know if it's necessarily going to necessarily shake itself out anytime soon, but it's there. And it's lying beneath the surface right now, man.
We're gonna have a lot to talk about. This one's gonna be brewing for a while. I like sitting back, like we said early on, and watching all these folks who've been defending, you know, kind of the integrity of the process backtrack. And we've been calling for a long time, even before this stuff started happening. We were calling it out. So it's good that if the chicken has. The chicken has come home to roost, or whatever I got to get, whatever the saying is, it's coming home. So,
the train has left the station. Is the one I like to use.
I like that.
The train has left the station. If you had your ticket for the 6:30 L, you missed it. You gonna have to catch the 6:45 because you missed the 6:30. You just missed it.
And Phil, we're gonna be working on trying to get that the author of Counterfeit Athletes. I gave you the book, so I should know the title. But we're gonna work on getting us an expert on, to get, you know, who's been writing about this for a while, to kind of bring some insight to the game.
Yeah. So we gonna let that one marinate with the listeners right now. So we're gonna let the real sports guys fans out there, the listeners out there, you know, we're gonna let y'all marinate on that one for a minute. We laid some heavy stuff on y'all with that one. Now, for the second, this is a two-part funky editorial, something we rarely do, but we just had to lay it down like this tonight. So we're gonna get into the second part of this. And I'm gonna preface it, I'm gonna set it up, paint a picture for you real quick. Big fight over the weekend. You know, if you paid that $64 to see this fight, it was worth it in a way, because it gave you something to talk about. You know, before the fight, you know, again, I'm sitting there watching it with my wife. We watching the fight, and she asked me who I want to win, and I said, I think Mayweather's gonna win. I just want to see something interesting happen, and that's how I am with a lot of sports. I have teams that, you know, I grew up watching the Bears. I live in Wisconsin since I was 13, so I follow the Packers. I root for the Packers. You know, I try to root for the Bucks when they about something, just rare. I root for the Badgers. You know, I have teams that I kind of root for, but I'm not necessarily viscerally tied to any particular team or any set of colors or anything like that. At the end of the day, as a fan of sports, I just want to see something compelling, interesting and captivating happen on a Sunday, a Tuesday, a Monday, whatever. I just want to see something interesting happen. And we got that and some on Saturday night in Las Vegas. Floyd Mayweather versus Victor Ortiz. If you watch the 24/7 lead-ups, it was a highly anticipated fight, and it did not disappoint in the realm of giving us something to talk about and giving us more to think about around the sport, and creating a buzz around the sport of boxing. Whether you view that as a positive buzz or a negative buzz, I'm going to give that to the sports guys and let them dig into in a moment. While we have Hino on the line, I want him to jump in because he had a bit of a back and forth going on Facebook with quite a few people. And D. Wills was involved in this verbal melee going back and forth as to the nature, the ethics, just the whole situation that went down. So what went down, if you didn't see the fight, if you've been living under a rock somewhere in Borneo hanging out with Muammar Gaddafi, if you've been hanging out with Muammar and you missed the fight, okay, you're kicking it with Gaddafi and you missed the fight, what happened was Victor Ortiz was engaged in a flurry. He was engaged in a flurry of punches, had Mayweather against the ropes, and it seemed that Ortiz kind of got a little bit frustrated with Mayweather's defense tactics and shot up through the middle of Mayweather's defenses with a headbutt to the chin. Now, it hurt Mayweather. If you've ever been hit in the chin like that, it hurts. And honestly, a lot of times getting hit in the chin is what can cause a concussion. But that's neither here nor there. It was a dangerous move. He shouldn't have done it. He got docked points for it. Joe Cortez was calling the fight. He sent the guys to their corners. Ortiz went over and apologized to Mayweather once. Cortez separated them, had them come back. Now, at this point, this is where the controversy begins. It's not clear as to whether or not Cortez gave the fight signal or gave the signal to the folks, to the clock keeper to start the clock. So they come out again, and as they come out again, Ortiz again goes to apologize. He kind of gives a little man hug. He gives Mayweather a man hug, and within a half second of there being enough space for Mayweather to get off a hook, he hits him with a left hook and then follows that with a right to the kisser. I mean, just all in the front of his face. All the front of Ortiz's face got blowed the F up. Right? Just got blowed up. And Ortiz was out. Joe Cortez turns around and just started counting. I don't know what Cortez was doing, but he just started counting. It was like a wrestling match. You know, those old wrestling matches where you watch Roddy Piper trip Hulk Hogan or something, or Jimmy Hart trip Hulk Hogan, and then the dude slide on top of him, and the ref just turned around. He was distracted for some reason, and then he run over and started counting. That's what it was like. So that's how the fight ended, all right? So for those of you who didn't see it, that's what went down. That's how the whole situation kind of developed. It was shocking, all right? It was shocking, but it was entertaining. And then the best part about it was Floyd Mayweather and Larry Merchant have a very tenuous relationship, and that's an understatement. So then they get to going back and forth, verbally jousting with each other, which ultimately ends in Larry Merchant claiming that if he was 50 years younger, he would kick Floyd Mayweather's ass. It was just an amazing flurry of events. It really was. It was excellent. it was sports theater at its best. So, I'm going to throw it to my man Hino.
Game Changer, you need to work for Soap Opera Digest. I mean, that was a beautiful recap.
That was it.
I mean, the recap was excellent.
It was everything on point.
Man, you know, as my man DeJuan Shorty used to say, you know, I do it for the people. Yeah, I do it for the community. You know, I love the kids. I'm gonna toss it to my man Hino. I want you to break down your sentiments on the event, how you saw it, how you felt about it, and then everything that followed and kind of the exchanges that you got into in proceeding. So I want you to just go ahead and lay that out for us, Henny.
Just like a lot of other people, I paid for the fight. I had a group of people over watching the fight. I remember the situation when Ortiz had him on the ropes. Like you said, Marcus, it seemed like Ortiz was getting frustrated because he wasn't hitting him like he wanted to. Went in for the head, but that whole situation happened. What I noticed, I have to see it again this Saturday. I saw the refs say timeout. Time. He separated them to their corners. Then he went to the judges, told them he was deducting a point. I never saw the ref say time in. Never saw him say that. I'm kind of mad both at Victor Ortiz and Mayweather. As far as Victor Ortiz, you're a professional fighter. You know, whatever happens, you saw that first left hook that he gave you. He went and looked at the ref. You need to put your guards up. I've only had like two fights in my life, but I know if I got a man that's trying to beat my butt, I'm gonna put my guards up. And then just anybody.
Hey, also, Hen, it's the internet. You can cuss.
Okay, but just when you got a person, people in my house said Ortiz could have got up. Mayweather is a professional fighter. He got in his stance and was just able to cold rock his ass to the ground. He got knocked out. He Mayweather knocked him out. But here's my other point. I'm kind of mad at Mayweather because he did what he had to do, which is fine. But as a professional fighter, on his end, okay, he headbutted me. What I would do, I'm going to show for the next 7 or 8 rounds why you shouldn't have did that. Because, you know, you're getting paid $20 million. You know these other people want to see a good fight. I never seen Mayweather. I never seen anybody get booed in their hometown. Everyone's saying that those are all Mexicans. Those are not all Mexicans booing him. It wasn't. And like you said, Marcus, I'm just saying. That's what everybody in my house said. Oh, those all Ortiz people. No, it's not. Because if I was there, I'd boo Mayweather too. No, it wasn't. Like you said, Marcus, it seemed like a wrestling match. You had somebody catch the attention of the referee, and then somebody else come in with a chair to hit the guy. You turn around and just get on him and count 1, 2, 3. Even afterwards with Larry Merchant, it's just, I've been watching 24/7. You know, I had more respect for Mayweather coming in, but just him being a professional fighter, I lost more respect for him. You know, and then it almost seemed like he wanted to boast about knocking Ortiz out. I don't know. I think it was sad for boxing. It seemed like they were trying to catch up with, I really don't watch the MMAs, but I heard that's big now. And they, you know, just like trying to attract something. I don't know what I seen Saturday, but it was ugly. That's my intake on it.
D. Wills. I know you feel a certain way about this whole thing too, so I want you to weigh in. I appreciate him because he laid it out. He laid it out nicely. He laid it out there nicely.
He laid it out, and he was squarely on the Ortiz side after the fight because this post did. We can put it like this: our discussion was so crazy that I think the last post was today. So that's the fight was.
It
Saturday
was.
Night.
I've been seeing it every day.
That's right. We've been going back and forth all night. And so basically, my position was there's a couple things. Ortiz' corner, his whole camp, even through 24/7, had identified that Mayweather threw elbows. If you watch the fight live, the last conversation between his corner men and Cortez, when they were talking, when he was briefing the fighter, they asked questions about how you checking. So they already knew that they were in a battle with somebody who was going to go at it. Ortiz gets in the ring. He knows the only way he can win is be physical. Now, I watched a lot of boxing, and usually when somebody's fighting like that, they're just going to push it. They're going to push the limit because that when you get in with a fighter like Mayweather, you have to get physical. That was part of – that's why when he did the headbutt, I was like, okay. This young buck trying to say, look, I'm here. I'm going to do by any means necessary. He recognized him. He said, I'm sorry the first time. But then who comes back a second time? And at that point, it showed to me that he wasn't committed to his strategy. This is a kid who's been taught from the time he started boxing. I was talking to my brother about it. My brother just went off on me. He said, this is a kid who started from the time in boxing, they always teach you protect yourself at all times. This is a kid that they already have been training him. You got to be very careful what you with Mayweather. So he had that built into him for some reason, and it was an action that was started by him. It wasn't started by Mayweather. It was an action that was started by him. And you could tell that you can add assists. And so when Mayweather hit him at first, I was kind of shocked. I was like, damn, he hit him. But it made sense. And so my thing is protect yourself at all times. People are in here to try to get their money. And Mayweather has never said he's not going to do whatever he needs to do to win a fight. And so the biggest argument was this whole thing about integrity. Look, integrity in boxing went out 20 years ago. And so when people come in trying to assume that, nothing Mayweather did was out of bounds. He did what Ortiz allowed him to do. And that was the part that got me shocked. And the other thing people have to remember is
Mayweather's been in dirty fights like this. Where, if people remember, I was at the Zab Judah fight. Where Zab was hitting him low, he was doing all this stuff, and Mayweather really didn't come back at him. I mean, he was hitting him in the back, in the head. You remember when that broke out? That's when Roger got in trouble and had to, got suspended. So Mayweather has been in fights like this, and on his side had held his composure. And in this fight, he was like, you could tell, he was like, I'm not going through this again. He straight jabbed. So it's not like he just comes in this context. Mayweather's been in these kind of fights with folks that hit him low, done all kinds of stuff, and he hasn't really reacted. And so I think people got to put this kind of stuff about Mayweather in context when they look at it. When you 41-0 and everybody's coming after you, folks try everything to try to take what you got. And he's been real about, I'm going to do what I need to do to hold on what I need to hold on to.
And I can agree with you with that. But I'm going to kind of compare it to, like, say, I'm going to kind of throw it to basketball, like a Shaq or Dwight Howard. You know, the way they get hit, the fouls that they take, you know, you have to somewhat be a professional, because it could have been many a times that Shaq could have broke somebody's jaw the way they fouled him, or even Dwight Howard. So I just think the way he retaliated wasn't professional the way I wanted to see it, because you are 41-0. You are one of the greatest fights ever
But how many boxing matches have you seen where they'll break and folks will swing on the break?
I agree.
How many fights have you seen?
But this is where I'll say,
but that's natural. But that's natural.
It wasn't a clean break. That's the other piece that I think, what the hell was Joe Cortez doing?
Well,
that's the other piece that I think needs to be talked about and is not being talked about at all, because boxing does really have a governing body.
Yeah.
But I don't – the thing I want to know, was the clock started? If the clock is started, then it's a fight. I don't think the clock was started. And if the clock wasn't started, then Joe Cortez hadn't called box. That's the piece. Like, he knocked him out because Cortez counted. But whether or not it was legal depends upon whether or not they were supposed to be boxing. Now, that's a whole other situation. I get why Floyd hit him. And you know, and Floyd hit him intentionally. Floyd didn't think it was time to box. Floyd knew it wasn't time to box. Because as soon, if you watch the replay, as soon as Floyd had enough space, he rocked him. He hit him with the left hook. So he wasn't, it wasn't like, okay, I'm waiting. And when he hit him, Ortiz didn't think they were supposed to be boxing. Because when he hit him, Ortiz looked at Cortez. Like, yo, he just hit me. And that's when he caught him in the face. But I think, yes, Ortiz should have protected himself. Absolutely. But in that situation, I think Ortiz was like, he just hit me in the face. Like, ain't you going to do something about this, ref? You just took points from me. He just rocked me in the face. And so, because Ortiz immediately, and that's what makes me think there was no box call. Because if Ortiz gets rocked like that, he is a professional boxer. His hands go up instinctively. You know what I'm saying? He is a professional boxer. His hands would have went up instinctively if he thought that they were supposed to be boxing. Because he's done that only 10 million times in his life.
But if you look at his reaction, he laughed like, damn, I knew I shouldn't have done it. And if you looked at when they talked to him afterwards, most people who felt like they were done wrong would have been complaining, yelling.
And I agree. And that's a confusing piece to me.
For his action. And then he didn't say anything about it because he knew he should have been protecting himself.
I don't think he knew he should have been protecting himself. I think he knew that Mayweather got him back.
He got him back, but he knew.
I don't think he knew he should have been protecting himself. I think he knew Mayweather got him back, and I think he knew he should have known better. Because you in there with a Grand Rapids, Michigan hustler.
Right.
That's how we do.
And he should have known better. You know what I'm saying?
Grand Rapids. Okay. Yeah.
It's like if you get taken for a ride and you walk away and Captain got your wallet or got you $400 on some hustling on the street,
You know, you done bought some socks off a cat, you know, on the corner of State and 39th, and then you get the socks to the crib and they got holes in them.
Socks?
You got.
Socks?
Hey, he didn't know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
he didn't know what I'm talking about. He didn't know what I'm talking about. Cat roll up on you with a pair of socks. Like, hey, you want some socks? You standing at a red light.
I got them for the
low. You and your ride at a red light, cat roll up on you, knock on your windshield. Hey, brother, got some socks. You know,
again, kid, I'm going to say this right now. And we got some from my boy L. Randall. He said Cortez is the real blame. He on our chat line. But I'm gonna get this. Max Kellerman, when he tweeted, I hit the end up with this and folks up with this. But this is what he said. This is where he summed it all up. He said Mayweather, opportunistic. Ortiz, relatively inexperienced. Cortez, bad moment. Merchant, memorable one. To me, that summed up everything. When Kellerman put that hit that up on the Twitter, and so all those things, it was a bad storm. But what I said, and when we really got in the battle, was what I said. All it did really for boxing, because everybody's saying this is a disgrace to boxing. No, what it did was create two more mega fights. It created two more mega fights. The Pac-Man, the Pacquiao fight is going to be a mega if Pacquiao gets through this next challenge. And this rematch with Ortiz is going to be a mess. Because Ortiz came out of this. He didn't come out of this. We talk about it, but he didn't come out of this any less scarred. It was a bad moment for him, but people still see him as a great future champion in boxing. He didn't lose anything on his brand, really, I don't think. I think he created an opportunity for another big fight. So I think that what I was reacting to people online is that they're thinking, we're throwing everything out the window. I'm like, no, there's going to be another. There's a couple more pay-per-views that's going to be paid on this one.
And I agree. And that's to me, after the fight, I'm like, why is Ortiz not pissed? Why is he not tearing this ring apart right now? And I was like, it's because he know he's going to get a rematch. And he's going to get more money.
And to me,
you know, my position on Ortiz is it just seemed like after the fight, he was just happy to be there.
Yes.
You know, I think about after Floyd was done with his tiff with Merchant, and then they moved over to Ortiz. You know, Larry made that turn to his right to Ortiz. Ortiz just looked like a kid in a candy store. Like,
that's right.
I shouldn't even be here. I'm happy to be here. And I attribute that to either this is the biggest payday of his life, and he know he has another one coming, because Floyd just said 60 seconds earlier, if he wants a rematch, I'll give him a rematch. And Floyd's people looking in the back like, why did you say that? You know, the other thing is, I think that Ortiz, I mean, again, this interview took place, you know, we're talking 300 seconds after he got knocked out, a few minutes. I mean, this Joker may have still not quite been there. I don't know if he could have passed, you know, the sobriety test on the side of the road still. I mean, he literally got hit with the two pieces and a biscuit. I mean, he got, like my man HG just said, I mean, he got knocked cold out, okay? So I don't know if he had all his faculties, if they had all returned to him quite yet. You know, the last thing I want to say, getting an opportunity to kind of speak in here, is I love Roger Mayweather. I love him. I mean, it's just something about this cat. In 24/7, with, you know, the HBO series, they asked this cat, so have you watched a lot of tape on Ortiz? Mayweather said, why would I do that? And when they cut to Mayweather in between rounds, it's just classic. This is classic.
It is.
Oh, I mean, he don't have a whole lot to say to Floyd. You know, Floyd, this MF ain't got nothing for you, okay? I mean, Roger just keeps it 100. He keeps it 100 with him. And Henry made a quality point a few minutes ago that he thinks it's somewhat of a black eye for boxing. It was a bad day for boxing. I respectfully disagree.
I think that this was a great day for boxing. Because, I mean, think about Floyd's last fight. Think about Pacquiao's last fight. I mean, I couldn't find anybody talking about it the next day. I couldn't find anybody talking about it on Monday. And like Devon said, this sets up another mega fight that nobody thought about going into this fight. So for me, with boxing, just they're hemorrhaging fans. They're losing fans left and right. The MMA, the golf, the swimming, you name it, boxing is losing fans. And to me, this is a way to get people talking about boxing and getting the whole boxing spirit re-energized.
Yeah, I like I said before, I'm a fan of moments. And this is a collective moment that our generation of sports fans is going to remember and talk about. And so in that sense, I think it was okay for boxing. I do kind of agree with him a bit, and I see where he's coming from in that, This does kind of hurt the credibility of what goes on in the ring slightly in the eye of a casual fan. But at the same time, I do think it creates a whole lot of excitement to see them lace them up again and get out there and fight again. So I agree with that sentiment as well. Now you have another mega fight that didn't exist, you know, before Floyd laid them bricks on him.
The other thing
I want to just throw this out there real quick again. My lovely wife, she said the same thing about Roger Mayweather. She said, I ain't no boxing expert now, and I don't claim to be one. But I don't know if that was good advice. I don't know if he's necessary. When they go to Mayweather's corner, the translator, when he translates for Mayweather's coach, it sounds like he's telling them a little bit more. And giving them a little bit more information. I mean, basically, Roger Mayweather was in there just basically like, go out there and beat his ass.
Pop his ass with that jab. Pop his ass with that jab.
I got a question. Do we have time for a quick four-man straw poll?
Absolutely.
Quick question. Okay, and I hope everybody is sitting down, embrace themselves. What about the possibility of a fix? I say this because the headbutt scene, it just came out of nowhere. I mean, you got somebody jacked up in the corner, and then you're going to headbutt him? That doesn't make sense to me. And then, you know, Ortiz trying to make up with Floyd, what, 7, 8, 9, 10 times? Manhood? Come on, man. You know, and again, one of the students in my class brought it up. It seemed like a fix. And that kind of, I mean, that stayed with me. So, I mean, I really would like to get a straw poll from you gentlemen. How likely?
I brought it up that night. I felt like, because I know how calculated Floyd is. I know how calculated this cat is. I know how much of a, he's 10 steps ahead of people as far as his business goes. And again, this is a professional fighter who didn't put his hands up at any point.
Right.
So for me, I don't think that's too far off, man. I really don't, and I didn't that night because I had to let go of that thought. I let go of that thought because I was like, I was just pissed because I just blew $64. And so I had to kind of let that thought kind of subside a bit, you know, because I was a little perturbed because I had just blew that money. I think we lost Hino, but we picked up Ray. So I don't know if Hino dropped the call, if he stepped away, but we picked up Ray. Ray, you there?
I'm here.
All right. So just to get you kind of up to date where we at, Phil T just wanted to see if you take a 4-man straw poll to see how we felt about a possibility of a fix with the Mayweather and Ortiz fight. And I'm voting. Or the possibility of a fix, I'm voting likely. I'm not going highly likely. I'm going likely. On a scale of 1 to 4, I'm giving it a 3. 4 being highly likely, I'm giving it a 3 as far as a fix. Just given the way everything played out and the way that nobody's asking any questions about whether or not the clock had been started, whether or not Cortez said, it's 2011. Go back to the tape. It shouldn't be no asking Joe Cortez whether or not he said fight. Go to the tape. The tape will tell you whether or not the man said fight.
But there's a process for appeal on that, and they can go and they can go and appeal on that.
Devon, I don't even care about the process of appeal. I'm talking about HBO got the tape. HBO got the tape. Play it. Court of public opinion. Court of public opinion. The appeals process is the appeal process. They can go through that. Court of public opinion. Did he say box or not?
But the, what I would say is this. What this is really about, we're missing, is that Ortiz actually was unraveled in front of our eyes. And that was part of, I could see that. I scored the fight. And I was scoring the fight as I was watching it. And I could see. Everybody thinks they're going to do something to Floyd. And what ends up happening when you get in there, you realize this cat ain't no joke. He's gonna hit you with, he gonna be hitting you with stuff, and he's gonna frustrate you. He just—it's funny. One of the things I put up on my post up here is that everybody, Floyd is the biggest contradiction because he clouds you with all this stuff, but this cat ain't never out of shape. Like if I cannot remember a boxer where you could say, well, he kind of got his in between fight weight, and then he's battling for weight. Floyd ain't never trying to get to weight. This cat is a master in terms of being prepared. And what I saw Ortiz doing was unraveling. He was falling away from his game plan early on. And this is a cat with the lights. A fight like this, he fought Berto, and that was a big fight, but that's nothing like this. This is the big fight. These are where moments in Hall of Famers are made kind of fight. And it was the moment that he was beginning to kind of unravel as he went in it. So I think that's part of it. I think his whole reaction was part of that unraveling. The headbutt, how he reacted to it. It was a way in which he reacted when he got knocked, when he quit a couple fights ago. It's one of those things that I think is something that he kind of plays this facade of being tough, but that he's got this piece where he's got to be able to overcome, and he's not overcoming it. And so I wouldn't necessarily say the fight was fixed. I see it as a young fighter who's only 24 years old, frozen a moment at the same time where I agree with you. I don't know what Cortez was doing. I don't know what the hell he was doing. So I can't even explain that part of it at all. There's no explanation for what he was doing. He just lost control of the moment. But I saw a young fighter who was having trouble with the moment. Whereas Floyd, this is what Floyd do every time. So I think, and I think Cortez not doing his job took it to another level. He didn't have control of that moment. He was not, was his whole thing fair but firm or whatever it is? He wasn't doing all that. So I think it was just a perfect storm. And I'm not going to say, I don't think it was a fix or anything. I just think it was a young fighter who just made some mistakes in a moment. You can't make mistakes. You can't recover from like with a guy like Floyd.
Ray, we haven't heard your take on this whole situation.
Well, I didn't see the fight. I didn't see the fight, but all that I've read was that he got caught, you know, with his hands down. You know, the headbutt probably did frustrate him, and it was probably a headbutt out of frustration, you know. You got to harken back to, you know, Mike Tyson biting off Holyfield's ear, you know. I mean, just what do you do when you can't do anything anymore? And as far as the referee, from what I understand, you know, he did lose control. And once you got somebody falling, you know, you can't unring that bell, you know. You have to go with it. You know, if he's falling, all you can do is just stand back and go, uh-oh, I messed up. But, you know, you can't really take the fight away from Mayweather, you know. To have a target stand there with his hands down, you know, when all you ever schooled in boxing is to keep your hands up at all times. They tell you that before they ring the first bell, you know. Keep your hands up at all times.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, I don't know. I find, you know, in this day and age, you know, to fix a fight of this magnitude, you know, in front of so many people, I find that hard to believe. Even Mayweather is not foolish. You know, if Michael Vick can go to prison for fighting dogs, you know, you don't want to try to fix a multi-million-dollar fight. You know, you ain't never gonna come out of jail. So I can't say it was a fix. You know, I think that, you know, I have to agree with Devon. You never see Mayweather out of shape. You know, you always see him, you know, he has the most unconventional training because it seems like he's training all the time. He's boxing all the time, you know. He you know, if he ain't fighting people, he, you know, in the ring, he's fighting his girlfriend at the house.
Fighting his old lady.
Yeah.
And Ray, the one thing I want to put in, Phil, you understand this, playing football. I always blame you should never get hit by a crack block.
No.
Because you are always taught what to do when there's a crack block. The defensive back, the corner, somebody got to call it out. You got to keep your head on the swivel. And the first thing you do, whenever I played outside linebacker, the first time a receiver would come down and try to do that, I'm putting you down there in the hospital. But I gotta let you know it's going to be a long night. But I'm always aware of that. If I ever got caught with that, I blame myself. And I blame my teammates. The things that you just prepare for, you always work on. And that's this kind of thing. You always, this is something you taught before you even really get in the ring. This is the first thing they tell you before you even step in. And so to make that big a mistake, that's why I put more on Ortiz than I do on Mayweather. Because that's youth. Floyd would never make that mistake.
That's it. And,
Floyd would never make that mistake.
You know, and it was, you know, to give him, you know, just do it. It was a combination, you know. I mean, you know, it was.
But see, what I'm saying is, it's only a mistake. It's only a mistake if Cortez said fight. If Cortez hadn't said box, there was no need for him to have his hands up.
But again, you know. You know, they tell
I get, Devon, I get that. That's a general rule. I get that. That's a general rule. But, again, if I'm standing out, if the whistle blows and the cat comes and jumps on a pile and knocks you unconscious, that ain't your fault. The whistle blew. Play was stopped. That ain't your fault that this cat kept going after the whistle.
I'm saying he's split.
That's not your fault.
Forward.
Yeah, you should be looking out at all times, but you're walking back to the huddle.
He was looking at that boy. He knew. Or, and that's why he's smart. I'm telling you, I haven't heard a complaint from him yet. Have you?
No.
You know, and I almost wonder.
Because he's finna get another paycheck. Why should Ortiz at this point go off the hinge? Complaining when he's going to mess up his rematch opportunity. Ortiz at this point is like, if I just shut up, it's another 20 mil at the end of this rainbow. So let me just shut up. Let me just shut up, and I ain't going to complain about it, however I feel about it. I need to shut up. And because I felt like that's how he was at the fight. He was like, shut up. Let me not say nothing, and I get my money on the other side.
People in Ortiz's camp must be thinking at the time, I mean, it's kind of like that coach when the guy you just bring off the bench takes his three-pointer, and you're like, why'd you shoot that? And it goes in, nice shot. You know, Ortiz's people are probably thinking, why the heck did you just – I mean, why didn't you defend yourself? But then the next day, again, once he regained his faculties, they're thinking, you know what, kid, this was the best move to make. Because like what Marcus just said and what Devon said earlier – this kid has the opportunity to get another, at least one other major payday.
Well, that's just circumstance. I think, you know, and again, I didn't see the fight, and I do want to see it. But I also wonder if there wasn't a bit of guilt from that headbutt that causes him not to really say anything. You know, you have to wonder if he don't feel like, you know, he got what he got because he did what he did. You know,
that's right.
And
that may be it. That also may be it. But at the same time, to say that he should have had his hands up in that situation, to me depends upon whether or not the ref said, if Joe Cortez said box, yeah, get your hands up, boy. That's your fault. You should have had your hands up. You got caught slipping. But if he ain't said box, you know what I'm saying? That's like a cat. That's like a cat hitting me with a screen when I'm coming out of timeout. You can't. The game ain't started yet.
But that part right there is still debatable. I got the fight. I'm gonna go down and look at it after we do this.
That's what I'm saying. Like I've looked at it. I've looked at it like 10 times, and I can't tell. I can't because I don't have the replay. I have the replays I've seen. Don't have the audio of whether or not But there was at no point where it looked like Cortez got both of the fighters and was like, fight. Because afterwards he turned around, when the punch happened, Cortez was looking at outside the ring like he was finna tell him to start the clock. Or to start the clock on my call.
But if that, then he wouldn't count. What he would say is, not a knockdown.
Exactly. So what the hell was he doing?
So the knockdown, he was too defiant. But the other thing is, and we got to get back, the only reason you're in that situation is because Ortiz created it. That's how you end up in that situation. He created the situation by doing the headbutt. If he had, in a situation where he had the advantage, he had him in the corner where he was supposed to be, working on him, and out of the blue does the headbutt. So that right there, he created the scenario that got his ass knocked out. So I can't feel sorry for that because you had him when you needed him, on the ropes.
Okay, here it is right here. Here's the litmus test. Devon, in that situation, Cat headbutts you. The ref hasn't said box yet. Do you rock him? Do you knock him out? He got his hands out. Do you knock him out?
Okay,
so you're knocking him out, right? Do you knock him out?
Yeah, I'm knocking out, yeah. I'm like, you just didn't do that. And that's why I want to see the fight, because I have this, I wonder if he didn't think that headbutt, you know, started a little damage. You know, I wonder I'm not worried about it.
And he came out, Floyd was calculated in getting him back. That was payback. That wasn't, I thought the fight started. That wasn't. I don't think Floyd was concerned whether or not Joe Cortez said fight or not. Floyd was going to knock him out.
Floyd
came up to him. He gave him a little dap. And as soon as it was, I mean, it was one of those moves. As soon as you back up off me enough where I can get this hook around, I'm getting you.
Yeah,
as soon as he backed up off of him, it was like wham, wham.
From what I understand, I wouldn't have been surprised to hear that the bell had rung. You know, that the headbutt had occurred 2 seconds before the bell rung and Floyd hit him twice. You know, because Floyd ain't, you know, always knocking people out, you know. This sounds like Floyd got pissed and he was going to get two quick licks in, you know, just to let him know this ain't going to be, you know, your night. It ain't going to turn out like you think.
That absolutely was what it was. He was making a point. You know, he was making a point, and we've all been in situations like that as an athlete where somebody does something. I remember one of my first games as a college freshman. I was down low. I'm a guard. You know, I'm in there mixing it up with the big guys. And this cat from Lake Forest punched me in the stomach. He like gave me a jab to the stomach in the middle, and I'm like, for real? So you know, I'm going down court. I'm yelling at him. I'm giving him what for? And in my mind, I'm like, as soon as I get an opportunity, he catching one.
Right.
I don't care if the ref's looking or not. As soon as I get an opportunity, he catching one. And I got him back.
Right.
And we've all had those situations where somebody got us, and it was like, okay, that was uncalled for. What you did was uncalled for. It was out of line. And I guarantee I'm getting you back.
Right.
And that's what Floyd was on.
He took you straight out of your game. And that's what Hedrick Ortiz thought he did with Floyd, is he thought he took him out of his game. He thought, okay, now we can get back to fighting the way I want to fight. We've been fighting the way you wanted to fight, and now we'll get back to fighting the way I want to fight, you know. And he had his hands down, and boom, boom, out goes the lights.
And them lights went out, man. It was one of those moments where you're sitting down and you're like watching a movie, and it's one of those moments in the movie where the movie can end if the villain just shot the hero in the head, and the movie would be over like an hour early. That's how I felt about the fight.
That's how I felt about the fight.
The villain took the gun, not to say that Floyd was a villain, but you know what I'm saying? He took the gun and popped your boy in the head, movie over. Ain't nobody getting out of this situation. We ain't got to go through all the melodrama and nothing else. It's over.
But I agree with
Phil. When Larry asked him, you know, what happened, Floyd? Floyd said, I hit him with a left hook and a right cross, and good night. Period.
No, I mean, in quote, that's exactly what Floyd said. I mean, it was –
Again, my man did not have his faculties. My man was out of it. He was out of it.
Ray,
you didn't see the fight, but think of Debo and Friday. We knocked out old boy over the bike.
Well, he knocked out Red.
Yeah, when Red got knocked out. I mean,
my bike,
that's what it was like. Right. My bike.
But did he?
Your wife is online killing us, man.
Uh oh.
She said she's still mad. You know she's venomous on the chat line.
Oh man.
You know we don't run it all out. Hey, you telling me money don't know what he's doing? He got everybody hot about this. This is crazy. What I would say is this. I thought about this. You cannot discount, and this is I said it, the Zab Judah fight. The other fights that he's like, I'm not going through. I could tell he's like, I'm not going through this stuff again. Because what ended up happening in the Zab Judah fight, that's when they jumped in the ring. That's when Roger started going L&Rs. And I could tell he was like, I'm not going through this again. You done did this? Nah, I'm going to fix this the right way. And that's Grand Rapids style. That's how they do it in Michigan. They do that in the zoo. They do that in the Southeast. That's just how I roll. We ain't going to go through this twice. Now, I did it once. I did it in Vegas this way. I'm not going to roll this way. It's not going to be like this all night. Not with no young boy going to come up here and try and push me around. No, he going to sleep. That's what I saw. I saw a straight gangster look like, you going to sleep right now. Because I'm not going through this all night. You're not going to be headbutting me. We're not going to be saying I'm sorry. Nah. We come back in here, I'm left right in you.
Nah, yeah, I agree. It was definitely like, look, we come back out here. I'm getting you. I'm getting you back. And I agree. I think part of it was Ortiz was okay with that because I think he knew he overstepped his bounds.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things like where you snap out, you punch a guy in the face. You're like, yeah, I kind of hit you too hard. You can get shot back on me.
Yep.
I wouldn't have been a bit surprised to hear that the bell had rung and Mayweather just hit him twice. You know, I would have. I could see that, you know, plain as day. But again,
like,
as far
like
as
the young boy, it's like the young boy who gets physical with you in the post at the pickup at the park, now elbowed you, and you don't clear the rebound and knocked him out. Now I told you,
right?
Yep.
And everybody's like, you want to be fair? No, I'm like, this young boy. No, it's not going to be that kind of party. And so I think that's the kind of stuff that we just have to be aware of, and I could see it in his eyes. He was going to do it, but I didn't think he'd knock him out.
Yeah, and you could, man. And it was hella calculated. It was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He went out there to take a shot at him, and he was going to get him. And again, I think it just so happened. What I think was Floyd was willing to say, okay, he just lost points for headbutting me. I'm gonna go ahead and even this out and lose a point for knocking his block off real quick. When it don't need to be knocked off, and we both just gonna lose a point this round, and I'll carry that water, you know. And what so happened was Cortez wasn't looking. Again, to me, Cortez is the guy who's at fault. That's who's at fault. I don't necessarily blame Floyd for doing what he did. I didn't like it at the time. I understand it. It's like the whole LeBron situation. I didn't like the way it went down. I get it. Can't really argue about why he did what he did. I can't say I would have done it any different. I didn't like it. But Cortez, you got a job to do, man. And you see a cat on the floor, and you didn't yell box, and you wasn't looking. At no point should a boxing ref not be watching the action. There's no reason for him to be looking off to the side during the middle of the fight.
But that's the other thing, too. You know, given the fact that they were able to get close enough for two shots, you know, you could assume that there was some boxing going on. You know, if he was close enough to get those two shots in, you'd have to assume there was a fight going on.
Cortez wasn't even – he didn't bring them together. They came together on their own. He didn't bring them together. He wasn't even looking. He's actually pointing outside of the ring. He's not even paying attention to them. And again, at no point have I ever seen a ref in a boxing match not looking at the fighters. after he says box. It's right. Not like he got shit else to watch. It's only two cats in there.
Right.
And Gage, I would say, I think the missus put it like, she said she's not sure if Floyd even thought the fight was going to be over. You know, he hit him, but I don't think he swung like he knew he was going to knock him. I'm saying, like, it looked like he hit him, but I didn't think he hit him like he thought he was going to knock him out. Somewhere, I think he kind of was surprised that he put him out like that.
Floyd needs to channel that because he ain't got a whole lot of that in him, you know. He needs to channel that. Floyd, he used to just... He, you know, he the Gatling gun. He ain't, you know, he ain't the bazooka. You know, he needs to think about how that came about. You know, how that felt. He might have to get some of that muscle memory or something. Because, you know, to put a boy to sleep like that, young cat like that, I don't know.
Yeah, man. So, it was a moment. And that's what I love about sports is that you get those moments and you get to capture, you know, you get to have this shared memory. You know, 20 years from now, we're going to be having a conversation about, you know, the Floyd Mayweather-Ortiz fight, you know, and it's going to be one of those moments that we remember and that we discuss. And we still going to be arguing about it then.
But, you know,
like
when
the cat from Coming to America, we're going to be in the barbershop.
But we're talking about Ortiz
and Mayweather.
You talk about the payday that Ortiz
gotta,
got. What is this going to do for Mayweather in that Pacquiao fight? You know,
it's going to delay it. And we do have to get the missus on. She's got to call in. But that Mayweather Pacquiao fight is, and that's the other piece about this that bugs me is that. That's going to be delayed.
We got to close on a quote from the missus. She said, I demand if you see Floyd on the street, sucker punches are in order.
Hey, she from Beloit, man.
Oh, man, she all doing this, love.
Hey, they don't play in the B.
in boxing in Beloit,
that's the rule of the day. Keep your hands up. You know, keep your hands up.
Yeah, you know she grew up with that rule.
That's right. Kids in Beloit, you see them walking down the street, they ain't swinging their arms. They got their chin tucked, they got their hands up.
Right. Cool, Cleve, dishing out instructions. Keep your hands up, baby. Keep them up.
Yeah.
Right. Somebody might get you out there.
Yeah. I don't care if you walk by yourself. You never know.
Absolutely. So we're gonna have to revisit that, man. We're gonna talk about that. But again, it's probably gonna be a Mayweather Ortiz 2 before we finally get Mayweather Pacquiao. And my only hope is that Mayweather continues to win because I want him and Pacquiao to have that fight. I want it to be that fight. Mayweather comes in unblemished. Pacquiao is there, and they go at it. And that's the way I want to see that happen. You know, I don't want Mayweather to catch a loss before that fight. I want him to come in there unblemished, and I want them to go at it, and I want to watch that fight. I want to have that moment. So, you know, we're gonna revisit it. We're gonna let that one marinate, you know. And at the end of the day, it always comes back. It always comes back.
We need more dogs.
It always comes back to that, man. We need more of them dogs. All right. So we're gonna transition real quick. We got about 30 minutes left. We're gonna jump into our pick six for this week. We got our six games. I got six games lined up. First, we're gonna recap how we did last week. And then let me get the tally going. So, as of right now, we got D. Wills and Filthy sitting at 4-2 with the picks, with the weekly picks. They both at 4-2, and I'm at a lowly 2-4, which is unacceptable for a game changer. So, I got to change that up. So, last week we picked New England and San Diego, Philly and Atlanta, New Orleans and Chicago, Ohio State versus Miami, Oklahoma versus Florida State, and LSU against Mississippi State. Now, we all had New England, so we all scored on that one. D-Wills and I had Philly. We lost Ray, Eric, and Phil T. Eric, our guest, last week, and Phil T., they all had ATL. So they scored big on that one. So Phil gets picks up a game on us on that one. And then we all had New Orleans. Eric picked Chicago. We all had Ohio State except Ray. Ray went with the U. So Ray made out on that one. D-Wills had Florida State. Everybody else had Oklahoma. And then we all had LSU pulling it out. So I'm going to tally those up and see where we at. Let me see. So, D-Wills, you came out last week. You had two losses. Wait, you lost on Philly. And you lost on Ohio State. You lost on Florida. So, you had three losses. So, you went 3-3. So, now D-Wills is at 7-5. Phil T., he had the one Ohio State loss. So Phil T went 5-1. So now this brother's at 9-3. Goodness. I had two losses with Ohio State and Philly. So I went 4-2. So now I'm at 500. So I'm at 6-6. So I'm still in last place, but I'm coming for you, D Wills. I'm coming for you. All right, so now we got our picks this week. I'm gonna have to tally up Ray's because I think he went 2-1 the first week. So I'm gonna have to check his and tally his up and get a tally going for Ray. And we all had Mayweather, and we all won there. We're all winners on that one.
Right.
So we got the pick six.
Ourselves at all times. We did protect ourselves.
Right. We kept our hands up. You know what I'm saying? We kept our hands up on that one. We knew who was riding with. All right, so this week we got the New York Giants, our NFL games. We got the New York Giants at Philadelphia, minus Mike Vick. We have the Green Bay Packers visiting the Chicago Bears. And then we have the Houston Texans going in to face the New Orleans Saints. So, first game, D. Wills. Give me your pick.
All right, so we got for the Giants against Philly.
Giants against Philly.
We got, you know, we don't know if Vic is gonna play, right?
Nah, we don't know Vic's status, so
we don't know Vic's status, so we're doing it blind. This is gonna be a hard one. I don't trust the Giants, man. I'm gonna go home. The best way to do is home team. I'm gonna go with Philly. Home.
Okay. All right, D-Wills is going Philly. Phil T., who you got?
Well, first of all, my phone was going in and out. Can you restate my record and who's in first place?
Yeah, man, you're 9-3. All right, you're in first place. You're 9-3.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
You're doing really well. Good for you.
Thank you. We're all not winners, okay?
Wow, winning.
Regression analysis and stuff like that. You're running statistics.
Oh, you say, hey, D. New, you say you're the only one who...
Wow, winning.
That's right. Thank you.
It's all good. You got Philly?
Philly in a close one.
All right. Ray, who you going with?
Mike Vick plays this week. I'll take Philly. All
right, Philly. Yeah, I'm going Philly, too. I can't really mess with Eli and the Giants. They banged up. I just don't trust them dudes right now. Watched them play last night. They can't do it. Philly, I'm going with Philly. If Vick plays, it's not close. If Vick doesn't play, I still think they win, but I think it's a closer game. As long as Vince Young don't play. If they go out there with the young cat, Kafka, whatever his name is, I think they'll do all right. But if Vince Young go out there, I don't know. I don't trust Vince Young at all.
Thank you.
That's just me. second game, we got the Green Bay Packers the blood rivalry going against the Chicago Bears. Phil T, who you taking?
Well, the Packers, I mean, this game is a race for the wild card, essentially, because the Honolulu Blue is taking
So this man is, what is he, 6-3 in the winter?
9-3 and we can go back to the tape now because I was on the Lions last year, okay? Yeah, I'm taking Chicago on this one. I think Green Bay is a good team. I think Chicago is also a good team. But like I mentioned a few weeks ago on our preview show, I see Green Bay more as a 10 to 11 win team and not a, you know, 13 to 14 win team as everybody else thought.
Okay, so Phil T's going with the Packers. Ray, who you got?
No, Phil T's going with the Bears. Write that down.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, he's going with the Bears. My bad.
Make sure you,
my
make
bad.
Sure you write
Phil
that
T's
down.
Got the Bears. What did right. you say, Ray? Make sure you write that down.
write it down. Take a note.
So who you got, Ray?
Well, I ain't believing none of that wild card stuff, so I think the Green Bay Packers will beat the Bears. I think that, you know, this last weekend showed they played, you know, both have played strong offenses, and the Bears just can't handle it. So I don't see the Bears having the kind of offense that the Saints ever, you know, put out there. So the Bears just aren't going to score enough points. The Packers can score points. As bad as their defense has looked the last couple of weeks, they're still scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, I'm a weigh in next, and I gotta go with the Packers on the road. The Bears, their receivers, I don't think their receivers do enough against the Packers to help alleviate the pressure that the Packers are gonna be able to put on Cutler, who's been sacked 11 times in two games. Green Bay's gonna be able to put pressure on him, and his receivers just aren't good. I mean, the Bears just don't have good receivers. And against Green Bay, I mean, you got to have some guys who can make plays. And you saw it with Cam and Carolina's receivers. Steve Smith got off. The Brandon LaFell kid looks like he's going to be a player. He got off. And the Packers are going to be hopefully getting Tremont Williams back, and they're going to be getting Shields back. And so that'll allow them to move Charles Woodson back into the slot. Because Charles Woodson was matched up on Steve Smith this weekend, and that was not pretty. Chuck is good, but he ain't what he used to be. And Steve Smith got a bit of burst on him. So
before we go to
Jesus,
we got to do an over and under on how many times they show that Cutler on the sideline from last year's NFC Championship. You know, where he's looking like somebody showed his
puppy. I'm going four. Once a quarter.
Yeah. You know, and how many times are they going to question his heart and all that other stuff, you know.
Right,
I think
right.
The Packers are going to get after it.
Yeah, I think they're going to get after him too. D. Wills, who you going with?
Chicago season don't get started until people start talking about Lovey need to get fired. He haven't had a Lovey need to get fired game, and this is it. Green Bay, I'm going to bet Green Bay until they lose. I'm riding Green Bay through on this one, and by Monday, Tuesday, they can talk about how bad the quarterback is. And then Chicago will go on a little run at that point. That's when their season will start. Urlacher will come out and say something crazy and talk about rallying the team, you know. And so, and everybody will start dumping dirt and talking about the Honolulu Blue and all that craziness. And as much as I like the Lions, this is going to get that going. The season ain't right until you start talking about Love, you're going to need to get fired. And that'll happen after this game.
Okay. I'm going to pick this next one up. First, I'm going to lay my pick out there first. Houston at New Orleans. I'm going to go with the Texans on the road. And I'm going out on a limb with this one. I think the Texans can prove if they're for real or not, if they can take, you know, at home. If they can get who that at home, that's going to be a big statement for them as far as being real contenders. Now, one thing I will say about the Texans, I'm starting to dislike Arian Foster. That's all.
Do you have him? Is he on your team?
I got him on one of my teams, yeah.
Yeah, he's killing you. That's why you hate him.
I dislike him, too.
That's all. First he started complaining about fantasy football players and how they crazy, and then, you know, he tweeting his MRI pictures, then he not playing, a game time decision, and I had his ass in my lineup. You know what I'm saying? While I got Ben Tate on my bench, I could have put Tate in and got the 100 yards that I needed. And then this week I put him in again, and he leaves at halftime. I'm starting to dislike this guy. All right, that's all I'm saying. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm starting to dislike this brother. Ray, who are you taking? Houston or New Orleans? New Orleans is at home. Hello, Ray, you there?
He probably lost him in Janesville.
I'm thinking of Bernie Mac. He says he came to top.
He's coming back.
All right.
Hello?
Yeah, you there, man?
Yeah, I'm coming silver.
Okay, hey, New Orleans or Houston? New Orleans is at home.
New Orleans, I'll take at home. They're still upset they lost to the Packers. They're a damn good football team.
Okay. All right, D. Wills, who you taking?
I pick New Orleans to win their division, go to the playoffs, about 11, 12 wins. This is when they win. Houston's like Ortiz. They're not ready for the big moment. No, they're not gonna have their hands up. And people won't be complaining about what's going on. You know, so I think New Orleans is gonna hit them over. Huh?
They need this. Texas need this game about 6 weeks from now. They don't need it right now.
That's right. It's a little too early. And New Orleans is still trying to let people know, yeah, we won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. We back. And so this is another staple game for them. And they're going to put it on them.
All right, man. CLT, who are you taking out this game?
Houston. Period.
Write that down.
Excellent. All right, so now we're going to move into our slate of college football games. For college football, for the Saturday's college football games, we got Arkansas at Alabama in a big-time SEC showdown. We got Florida State going into Clemson for the big conference matchup in the ACC. And then we have LSU traveling to Appalachia to take on the West Virginia Mountaineers. So, I'm going to go with Ray first. Alabama and Arkansas. Alabama's the home team. Who are you taking?
I like them home teams in college football. You can't just run down to Alabama and win a game.
All right. So, Ray's going Alabama. D. Wills, who are you taking?
Alabama. That's all I need
to say. Bill T.
Now, last week was Mississippi State and LSU. I advise the fans accurately that you're not see an upset alert, but it'll be a false alert. This week, another upset alert, but Arkansas is going to finish them off. I'm taking Arkansas on the road in the shocker of the week.
Okay. Arkansas on the road. And listen, the brother did call that. And he did send out a text when it went across the screen to let us know that Brother Phil called that one for sure. Cat likes to be right.
We can't all be winners.
Oh, man.
We can't all be winners.
So I'm taking Alabama at home. It's a powerhouse program. Going into that stadium is hard to win down there. So I'm going with the Tide. Roll Tide. All right. So moving on to the next game, we got FSU at Clemson. D. Wills.
It's Death Valley. They're going down there without the quarterback, probably. That's what it looks like. I liked FSU last week. I think Clemson's got a little run going. These are games that Clemson normally loses, or they just in recent years they just haven't been ready for the moment. But I think they're gonna pull it out this year. I'm going to Clemson.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna jump in here
and give my pick, and I'm going to go out on a limb and go with FSU on this one. I think they got something to prove. It's a conference game. I don't think they want to lose too much ground in the polls. You know, I think they're going to rally around the backup. I'm going with FSU on the road. Again, it goes against my gut is to go with the home team, especially in college football, but I'm going to go with FSU on the road. So I'm going to go with the Seminoles on this one. I'm going to have my man Phil T check in real quick.
I, too, will go with Florida State. I like Clemson last week against Auburn. They look pretty good. But, again, I just can't trust Clemson. It's the same thing I said about Auburn last year, going to a couple of big games. I couldn't trust them, but they proved me wrong. So, again, I'm going to take Florida State on the road.
Okay. So you got Florida State. Ray, who are you taking?
I'll take Clemson at home.
Okay.
Leave it at that.
All right. And then we got LSU at West Virginia. I'll weigh in on this one first. I'm going to go, you know, Phil T, you went with Arkansas as your upset. I'm going to go with West Virginia, picking off LSU at home. I'm going to take that game as my upset for the week. So I'm going with West Virginia. Ray, who you got?
I'll have to go with West Virginia at home.
Okay. And D. Wills, who you taking?
LSU's seen this movie before. It's called Oregon. And, it's, you know, West Virginia's it's a prolific offense. Morgantown's a great place, a great home field advantage, but nothing like the Mad Hatter. He likes to go in there, steal one with that grin. You know, I want him to come on up to Ann Arbor, but I'm okay with Brady up there. But I just think he knows how to take a team on the road. He knows the moment. I think LSU, the defense is going to be suffocating. I think they win a close one, because you know, they're going to win a lot of close games because of their defense. But I think they still want to kind of set the tone for the rest of the season.
Okay, so you got LSU?
Yeah, LSU.
All right. And Phil T, who'd you take in that one? You took Phil T. Yeah, you got to weigh in. Who you taking?
You know, Tiger is considered a cat, but, I mean, LSU, man, they got plenty of dogs, so I'm going for LSU.
Where is it at?
We need more dogs.
Hey, game changer, and I'm going to say this. Phil T is kind of like, you know in the Olympics they always have that cat that's like the rabbit that sets the pace for the
2000.
That's what he did right now. But I'm looking at his picks this week, he's coming back to the pack. We're going to lean in. I'm like one of them Kenyan runners.
Good one. You going down, B. You going down. We coming for you, man. We coming for you. So, fellas, we got about 15 minutes left. A few stories in a freestyle I just want to get opinions on before we get into our dogs of the week. Mariano Rivera, man. Phil T, I know you're a Yankees fan. You're our resident baseball expert. I'm going to toss this one to you. Put it in perspective right now. Put Mariano in perspective for us all.
Mariano is clearly the best closer that I've ever seen play, and arguably the best one ever. That cut fastball he throws is just nasty. It does something that guys haven't seen from a right-hander. It's very odd that right-hand hitters have more success on him than lefties, and he's a right-hand pitcher. It's been so fun watching him play. Over the past 10 years, the Yankees have been in the playoffs 9 of those 10 years, and I've watched literally every pitch of their playoff games. And when they get to the seventh inning, they get through the seventh inning stretch and they're in the lead, it's pretty much a wrap. I mean, you're talking 95, 96% of the time, he's closing the door. So I've always liked Rivera. He gets it done. I remember his first year with the team, perhaps it was the second, when he was a setup guy to Wetland when they won the championship in 96. And in the eighth inning, it was just like a done deal, and then they handed the ball to Wetland, and Wetland just did his thing. Rivera, I mean, he just gets it done. Well into his 40s, still getting it done. And in baseball, you just don't see, I mean, in all sports, you don't see guys doing this into their 40s, still at a dominant level. So shout out to Mariano Rivera. Looking forward to the playoffs starting in the next couple of weeks. And looking forward to seeing the Yankees up by a run or two in the eighth, knowing that it's a done deal in the ninth.
Excellent. Excellent. I mean, again, this is one of those moments. This is a guy that we get to say, you know, we watched the greatest closer. You know, and, I mean, there are arguments that he has dominated. He is the most dominant figure at his particular position in sports, period. You know, that was an argument that was going around today on some of the shows, is whether or not there was any player who had played a position and dominated a position the way he did and defined a position the way he did. And really the only comparison that people could come up with was Gretzky and the way Gretzky played and the way he dominated hockey for as long as he did. But absolutely props to Mariano.
One last thing with Rivera. You know, I was trying to describe it to one of my good friends who doesn't watch much baseball, but he's a big football fan, and that might be the case for a lot of our listeners. Think about a kicker that has consistent range at 50 or 55 yards, where most kickers, they lose a little bit when they get to 50 yards in terms of their accuracy. Rivera is like a guy that has strong accuracy from 70 yards. Somebody might be listening and saying, what, 70 yards? Again, that's how impressive this guy is, where you got a team in a two-minute drill, they're saying we need to get it inside the 35. Well, Rivera, just get that thing inside the 50 and you're good. That's how dominant he is.
Spot on. Spot on. Spot on. So with that, we're going to transition. You know, props to Mariano, Real Sports Guys, the RSG Nation. We tip our hats, and we're going to get into our dogs of the week.
That's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.
So as the man said,
we need more dogs.
We need more dogs. So dogs of the week, fellas. Dogs of the week. D. Wills, I'm gonna toss it to you, my man. Who you got? Dog of the week.
Oh shoot, I was gonna let y'all go first. Y'all talk.
I'll take it. I got mine. I got mine. And this is kind of a karma. This is kind of a karmic dog of the week. Shout out to Romo. You know, we hard on Romo on this show.
Yeah.
You know, we don't give Romo a lot of love, but fractured rib, punctured lung, coming out there and leading your team to victory. That dog meter, the dog meter for Romo was on like 50-11. It was up there. It was through the roof. So, you know, Romo, my dog of the week.
We need more dogs.
BLT, who you got?
I got multiple dogs this week because, again, we need more dogs, some more the better. My first set, A.J. Green and Andy Dalton. Fortunately, they're on my fantasy team. It was nice seeing a young quarterback and a young rookie receiver getting it done. Unfortunately, they didn't win the game in Denver, but I like what I saw. I was really excited. Perhaps Cincinnati will win a few games this year.
My second dog, Megatron, Calvin Johnson. Stats, 3 catches, 29 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was double-teamed on 22 plays. Only had 3 catches, 2 of them were touches. But a lot of the other big plays that offense had was a result to the amount of attention that the Chiefs had to pay to Megatron. So Megatron is my third dog this week.
Excellent, excellent. D. Will.
Need more dogs.
I'm gonna wrap this up. And I agree with all of the ones you talked about. But the great thing about the dog is that a true dog, doesn't care about what anybody else thinks. And the number one dog this week is Floyd Moneymaker Mayweather. But after this day, he does what he says he's going to come in there and do, and he doesn't care what you think. At the end of the day, he doesn't care. He takes his stacks and walks out. He's going to line up again on the next opponent, and he's going to do it in the face of whatever people care. And I think ultimately, like Jordan, people used to complain to Jordan, say, oh, you used to get fouls. Jordan, like, so you keep on moving. And I like Mayweather. Mayweather is, he just doesn't care. And at the end of the day, that's the essence of a true dog. He doesn't care what anybody else thinks. Money.
Money. Money. Ray, you back on the line?
I'm back on the line. I'm going back to last week.
You know what it is, Ray.
We need more dogs.
I'm going with my dog from last week. I think we talked about it last week, and I told you that Cam Newton's performance last week, you know, was going to be what you can expect from him. And he didn't try to throw for 400 again. He didn't try to, you know, overpower. All he tried to do was win. And sooner or later, that's going to catch fire on that team. When they start believing in him, when they start playing, when that defense starts coming up behind him and doing what they're supposed to do, he's out there showing, as a good quarterback should show, he's willing to do whatever it takes to win a ball game. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before we start talking about the next big superstar in the NFL, you know, the next Michael Jordan of football. This kid is for real.
I honestly agree, man. You know, again, like, I was on the fence on Cam, and I said I was going to reserve judgment. I talked about the evidence that I had and how it didn't look favorable. That boy can play some football.
He can just
play. I'm glad y'all finally saying it.
That boy can play some football. Because even after the first week, I was like, hey, that was Arizona's defense. He put up hella numbers, but I need to see this one more time.
We got to, because you got to get some tape, man, because y'all were killing me. Can we do a segment on all the ways y'all were killing me on camera?
Everybody want to bring back the tape when it was right. Phil T talking about bring back the tape, man. I called Detroit last year. We will. I called Cam in June, man. Bring back the tape.
Hey, man, we are married. Hey, we are married. You can't say I told you so in a marriage, but you can do it over the phone. You can do it in a real phone.
Told you so is acceptable.
Hey, Mary Cash Love when some stuff is on tape. Hey, I said it's on tape. You can't change it. It's on tape. It's on tape. Play it back.
But I respect y'all, brothers. Y'all had me doubt my eyes. I'm like, man, look at that stuff wrong. Because I respect y'all. I'm like, man, I must be saying something other folks are not saying.
But at the same time, D-Wills, at the same time, you wouldn't predict 2 400-yard games. You just predicted that the boy was going to be all right eventually. You figured he was going to be good eventually. You didn't think he was going to be doing this right today, right now, right out the gate.
And that's the thing. When he was doing these things in college, you know, you thought, okay, it's college, you know, and he's just a man among boys. But you can't go up to Green Bay and just do that. You know, you just can't. But he can. He walked right in there and didn't change what he was going to do. You know, he just tried to win ball games. And when the rest of the team starts playing up to that level, that's going to be a hell of a football team. You know, that's just, I mean, you can't go into the locker room and look at him if you didn't do all you could do? Because he's doing that. He's doing that. You know, he's taking the bumps and bruises for 400 yards. And when the rest of the team starts playing up to that, they're going to be a hell of a football team.
Yeah, and he didn't look fluky. It didn't look. It wasn't a bunch of gadget stuff. They just lined up. He was in shotgun, and he threw the ball. He pitched it around the yard like he's supposed to do as a quarterback. And like I said, I'm all in. I'm on the bandwagon. You know what I'm saying? I'm in the back of the Pimp limo for Cam. I'm back there, man. I came on late, but I'm on.
Wait a minute. Now, I'm a huge Cam Newton fan, but, I mean, let's talk about the other side of the coin now. They lost, what? I mean, it was a one-score game for, what, until the last minute of the game, and he threw with three interceptions.
Yep.
We got to mention that.
Yeah, he threw three picks, but his picks, I was actually watching the game. I watched the whole game. I was actually okay with the picks that he threw because they were the right read, just bad throws. And I think those were things that more experience, he connects on those. He made the right read. He sailed one too high, went over the receiver's head, happened to be a safety behind him, got a pick. I think one, he tried to jam it in to Steve Smith. That was the bad one. He tried to jam it into Steve Smith. He was double covered. Woodson picked it off. And then I think the other one may have been tipped to something. But it was, I mean, again, the picks that he threw, I was okay with. I think the reason he was throwing the ball so damn much is because they couldn't run it. They really had no running game, given that they have two pretty good running backs. They had no running game, so he had to chuck the ball all the way around. And he started forcing the ball a little bit. But, again, that's something that, for a rookie, I was okay with the way he was throwing the ball. There weren't any times, like, I can watch guys like Chad Henne, even Eli, where I'm like, man, what the hell is you looking at? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And there were no moments where I was like, Cam, what the hell are you looking at? You know, other than the pick that he threw when he tried to jam it into Steve Smith, because there was a guy running right underneath him who was wide open, and he tried to jam it into Steve. And then the other one, he right read, got wide open. It was one of those things where I think he got a little too excited. It was a beautiful ball to the safety, though. So, like I said, after watching him last week, after watching him play this weekend, he ain't gonna throw for 400 yards every week.
No,
I'm not saying that. But the kid is the real deal. So, we're running out of time. Go ahead, Ray. Close it out.
Well, you know, it's just, I love to listen to Phil T because, you know, if this kid was wearing Honolulu blue instead of powder blue, he'd be all over. He'd have a man crush.
Instead of Carolina blue. That tobacco roll blue. Phil T don't mess with that.
Right.
Hey, but I will say, the Lions look real good, though.
They do.
I don't know if they're going to win a division. Feel, but 10-6, 9-7, 11-5, I can see them pulling that off. I still think the Packers win that division fairly easily, but I think Detroit is going to be a hell of an out in the playoffs, and I think they're going to make the playoffs. I'm with you on the playoffs. I'm not with you on the division. I think the Packers are still too good.
I do want to say back to boxing. I heard that Ray J and Fabulous got into it at the fight. He may be on the undercard for Mayweather and Pacquiao.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, real sports guys holding you down, keeping it real. That like we do.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right, folks, we off. We in the after-hours section right now. Everybody still on?
Yeah.
I'm still here. I don't know if you can hear me. I came through.
I can hear you. Yeah, you still on. Okay. Yeah, we are still recording, just so you all know. We're off
we
the air.
Be okay.
We are still recording. So those that download the podcast will be hearing everything we say.
Don't get crazy.
Right.
Don't say something you don't want your mama to hear.
We are at the after party.
Oh, man. That was a great show, man. That was a fun show. I had a good time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. This was one of the best sports weekends in a long time since LeBron did the decision. I mean, it's just like this was – I mean, we didn't get to the cam. We didn't get to a lot of that. I mean, there was so much stuff happening this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we ain't talking about the lockout in the NBA with the owners infighting. And, you know, there's a lot going on, man. Between this college football thing and the Mayweather fight, man, this college football thing is so many levels of just bull.
That's right.
It's crazy, man. And at the end of all this, man, the players better get a cut. Hey, because these academics, man, they ain't got no moral ground to stand on at this point, man. They chasing every dollar they can get. And the only thing they want to hold on to is this ideal of amateurism. Come on, man.
And the only
everybody
reason they hold
money.
On to that is so they don't have to pay nobody.
Right. Right,
you know, they're selling. They're willing to travel these young men anywhere to play for the highest dollar, and it's criminal.
The most stable conference is the Big Ten, and a lot of it is, you know, not just the football part, but what makes the Big Ten so stable is this whole CIC part they create.
Right,
they have this whole research infrastructure that they create that. They you know, and I think that's why Pac-10 is stable. Some of these conferences, they made those strong bonds along some of their academic and research infrastructure that they've all kind of bought into. That's like, you know, bringing them dividends. Like they're getting a lot of federal dollars, and so if you look at everybody's moving around, but like the Big Ten is just like sitting there. Like, has the Big Ten lost anyone? Think about that. I mean, think about that phenomenon when people are leaving and coming to a lot of conferences. Big Ten has lost anything.
I think the Big Ten is sitting around waiting for who else is going to fall through the cracks. And I'm not talking about these schools that nobody else wants to pick up. I think they're looking at some of these other powerhouse schools going, you know, if this team leaves this conference, you don't really have a decent conference. Why don't you come with us? Academically, you're sound. You know, you fit within our framework. I think the Big Ten is just, you know, hiding in the dark.
Boise State's got to really be questioning. Why the heck did we go to the Mountain West?
TCU too.
Sure.
I mean, because look, if you had Oklahoma, Texas, Boise State, and TCU, you could right there, you could rebuild the Big 12 with those teams right there. You could just, everybody would be like, yeah, we back on board. Everybody would be back on board with that. That worked for me.
But Texas going to the Pac-12 is like LeBron going to Miami. Like when you're a superstar, why are you going to somebody else's conference? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's one of those things where it's like you can attract people. You and Oklahoma together, if y'all could just get over these little things and talk about the revenue sharing piece, y'all can attract and still hold more money. And so I don't understand why Texas is going anywhere, you know, if they could pivot and help to rebuild. Like you said, there's nothing that says Boise State couldn't come in next year. Some of these teams just move, they're moving again. They're talking about moving again, and they just moved not too long ago. So I know people aren't abiding by any kind of deals. I just don't understand why Texas is going anywhere.
But when you got Texans suing Texans, you know, for leaving, that's just greed, you know.
That's greed, you know, man.
It's just, you know, Baylor. When Baylor is saying, look, you can't leave, you know, I brought you to the dance. You can't leave. You can't leave with him. You know, I'm the one that brought you here. You know, you got where you're at from you know, from riding on my car. No, it's but again, these you know, higher than, you know, high and mighty institutions, you know, are are exposing themselves and their football programs for what they really are.
Money machine.
What's the, what's the value of a 16-team conference?
And that's the other piece. That's the other piece that people need to figure out is, again, how is this going to play in the current? Because the BCS is going to have to restructure itself.
That's right.
Because again, the Big East still is an AQ league, and so is the Big 12. And
see,
so
that's the beauty
what,
of it.
How is that going to play out? And how is that going to affect? Because again, you got this 16-team conference over here with Texas and USC and Oklahoma and Oregon and Stanford. Only one of y'all can come out as a champion.
Well, not really though. The way that they, you know, the BCS is staying quiet as a mouse because the truth of it is that all of their information comes back to you from data, just raw data, schedule, strength of schedule, you know, who they played, how did they win. They don't really have to change a thing. They're not, and so they're not even going to try to get into the fight because they realize that you know, they're a conference or two from just being eliminated. These conferences are going to dictate, you know, who's going to be the national championship. You know, they just.
I think there's going to have to be a tournament.
That's right. And that's why the BCS.
Because if Texas finishes fifth in this new Pac-12, they're still good.
Right, exactly.
And
the BCS could rank them fifth in the nation based on the numbers
and
the data that they put in there.
Yeah, and what the Pac-12 is doing is what the SEC is doing. I mean, you could have a loss or two, right?
Right.
We saw that, and still be in a championship game, right?
Yeah.
They created that phenomenon where you might have a loss or two, it could still get the championship game. So,
have you guys heard what Boeheim said about this whole move?
Yeah. Boeheim been going in.
What did he say?
Boeheim out there talking like a senior professor.
Boeheim's been pretty critical, saying that this has to do all about football and it's not in the best interest of the basketball.
Not at all. I mean, when you have Georgetown, Marquette, you know, Kansas, flagship basketball programs looking for a conference to be in, that's not a good look for hoops, man.
And I'm surprised more basketball coaches haven't spoken up.
Yeah, because they bystanders right now.
That's right. They kind of sit silent, and they carry a lot. Basketball coaches, even though the revenue doesn't, but in terms of people who move the needle, basketball has more coaches who move the needle when they say something than football. You really think about it. You get somebody like a Patino. You get people out there. I mean, they got some people when they speak. And even retired folk, when they speak, they move the needle. And I'm surprised they haven't come out more to say something. You mean
Louisville is a free agent right now? I mean, we're gonna have to start talking about these schools like players, man. Louisville's a free agent. Kansas is a free agent.
I don't know how
Kansas fits academically, but if I'm the Big Ten, I say I'm gonna go ahead and shore that up for basketball. Just for basketball, I'll pick up Kansas.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is such a mess, man. I don't know where it's going to go. That's why it would be good, you know, if we can get Sack on here, get somebody on here to just unravel it, somebody who can get behind the curtain.
I mean, Villanova, you got a basketball program like Villanova that just left out in the cold. I mean, it's pretty wild when you start to think about it, man. When you really start to think about it, it's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Just how all this is shaking down. I mean, the Big East basically just turned into dust. The Big 12 is blown up. TCU just signed up to go into the Big East, and they signed up to marry a dead man. They engaged to a dead man right now.
They might have to sue. Because they signed for something, they anticipated they were supposed to do something. But now you got Notre Dame talking about maybe going to ACC.
Yeah.
Which they said makes sense because most of those institutions are smaller and private institutions. So from a size standpoint, I think Gottlieb was talking about that. That
can't be real, man. They're just scared.
Yeah, they make sense. Because they don't want to compete on a lot of different levels with these larger universities.
Whereas in ACC, they got many more smaller private institutions that aren't huge land grants.
Well, I think they realize that as these huge conferences get into play, you know, they could easily find themselves, being the B movie of football because they, there's going to be a lot of interest lost if they don't start, if they don't find themselves in the conference.
That's right.
Well,
Notre Dame already plays a Big Ten schedule.
Yeah.
Notre Dame already plays, you know, a Big Ten schedule. What they play Michigan State every year. They play Purdue and Northwestern most years. I mean, I don't see why they don't just go ahead and join. I mean, geographically, it makes sense, but I think Notre Dame is still on this thing that we can do things differently because we're Notre Dame.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, it's not 15, 20 years ago. I don't know if you can still do that.
Well, that's the thing. And how long is it since they won a national championship? Notre Dame is still, you know, riding on the tails of what they did how many years ago. And if they would just get into contention, if they just get into the top 10, the top 5, you know, they could continue their independence.
They can do that as long as, you know, NBC or somebody's ready to write the check.
Right.
So, you know, the only way that's going to turn around is if they say, look, we're not reopening. You're just not a draw for us.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
And you still got a BYU hanging around.
Yeah.
That's independent. Yeah, and what did they know that nobody else knew? Because they just kind of jumped. They just kind of went independent before all this went down.
Yeah.
And I would argue that BYU has more of a national presence in terms of recruiting and fan base around the country than Notre Dame does now in terms of football. I mean, when you look at the Mormon community and how they're just spread out throughout the country more and more as time goes out, I mean – BYU, it's interesting how they can recruit. You know, one of my good friends, Mormon, he kind of broke it down for me. And, you know, every Mormon kid who's a top football player or every Mormon kid, period, most of them have a high interest of playing in BYU. So they're in the discussion. They're in the top 5 automatically. And if BYU can take another step, man, towards national prominence, again, I think they overshadow Notre Dame at this point in terms of being the top independent football school. You know, if not now, it's pretty close. And I project in the next 5 years, BYU would take that over if both those schools remain independent.
And BYU also has inroads into the South Pacific. You know, they've been, you know, into some key recruiting networks there that just continue to be routes to Utah, BYU, and stuff like that. So you're right. In terms of their recruiting pipeline, they have a pretty rich recruiting pipeline that they can tap into that, yeah, Notre Dame hasn't been able to. Not every Catholic kid like they were in the 70s, like the Golics, are going to want to go to Notre Dame. They don't necessarily make decisions like that nowadays.
Hey, listen, I'm going to let you guys go. You have a good week.
All right, man.
All right.
Hey, take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, fellas, I'm going to cut out myself, catch some Z's. Right. But, man, great show, man. Great show.
Tell your wife we got to get her, Marissa, on the show, man. She was off the chat. On the chat.
Hey, you know, I was trying to log on to the chat room. I couldn't get in after you had said something.
Yeah, it sometimes it only lets one person on at a time. So only one person can be logged in as the under our account at a time.
Yeah.
So I was in for a minute.
Our own account. Yeah.
Yeah, I got my own account. I mean, it's an individual account separate of the show.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know what
people were saying that last week too. Like, I had like 4 or 5 people text me like, "Hey, I'm trying to get into the chat room. I can't."
Hmm.
So.
Well, we'll work on that. Try to keep it going.
Thanks for getting the rundown out early, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem, man. Like I said, I'm going to try to do that more, just get it out early, as early as I can, you know, on a Tuesday so you guys got time to kind of dig into it and really, really come prepared because, you know, when we prepare, we on. You know.
And guys, keep thinking about putting those thoughts out on our Facebook and our Twitter. And I know y'all got some midweek thoughts, so keep that conversation going. So if you can find a way, let's keep populating that as well.
Yeah.
You guys get my message about RJ being on next week?
Yep.
Okay.
We're good to go. Yeah, we're good to go.
Cool. And are we going to do that fantasy? Arkansas, I know Mo asked about that with their show.
Yeah, I can get that hooked up. I'll get that hooked up tomorrow. Get that out to everybody, and we can get that going.
Okay.
You know, a couple weeks in, and we'll see where Aaron Foster goes.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. I'm telling you, if it's an NFL play, I want to slap when I see him on the street, man.
Jamal Charles, man, I knew not to pick him. Something told me not to pick him.
Yeah, I stayed away from him this year. I didn't really have a good reason why. The juju on him just kind of bothered me a little bit, man. So I kind of stayed away from him.
I wanted to, and for some reason, I don't know what it was like. Crack was calling me or what it was, but I regret doing the selection. It was like I couldn't take it back.
I'm gonna have to find that, man. I'm gonna have to find that Pookie clip. It be calling me, man. It just be calling me.
That's about all I can say, man.
I'm gonna have to find that one, man. We gonna have to incorporate that into the show.
That's gonna be part of our fantasy segment. We all got selections like that.
Sticking
our heads. All right, gentlemen.
All right, fellas. Take it easy.
Yeah. Take care.
Peace.